Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. You know me. I'm a self-proclaimed psychotherapist, which is just an excuse to ask people really personal questions, I think. So anyway, thank you so much for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm really excited you guys are here. We've got a really great day because I've got this very special guest, Babak Ganji, and he came here from London. Can you believe us? He came here from London just to be on the show, and he's going to fly right back. No, that's, I'm just kidding. I'll tell you that in a second. I'll tell you why he's here in a second, but I just want to bug you to listen to Radio Free Brooklyn. Go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.org. Get our mobile app. You know, then you can listen to Radio Free Brooklyn all the time. But you know what else? We're having an event, and I really want you to come to it, okay? Listen to this. Do you like music? Well, of course you do. So it's called the Jam Yam Music Jam. At our Wicked Lady. Do you know where that is? It's at 153 Morgan Avenue. The Morgan stop on the L. And if you don't know where that is, you're too far away to come anyway. So anyway, it's on November 19th, and it's so cool. It's going to be an open music jam. So, Babak, you could come. You're a musician.
Oh, and it's on November the 19th.
Yeah, you'd be here?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Why don't you come? Oh, it's right around. Maybe Babak, my guest today, will be there. Anyway, are you a musician? Are you? Babak is. Are you looking for new musicians to play with? Well, since you don't know anybody here, Babak, or know many people, well, you have a musician friend here that you're staying with. Bring him.
I'll bring him with me.
Okay. Anyway, I'm excited. I genuinely am, guys. It's the first ever Yam Jam hosted by Radio Free Brooklyn. It'll be on Sunday, November 19th at 8 p.m. at our Wicked Lady. I think it's really cool. And do you guys know the Wicked Lady? Our Wicked Lady, it's actually one of the best. I think it's one of the best music venues in Brooklyn, certainly in the Williamsburg Bushwick area, without a doubt. It's a very cool place. Anyway, it's a free jam for musicians of any skill. That sounds dangerous. Oh, I can go too now. I'm gonna bring my multicolor xylophone. Musicians of any skill or stature to express themselves, and you can even just sing. Bring a song you want to sing. Kumbaya, that's what I want to sing. Oh, my God. Anyway, so let me tell you about Babak Ganji. And I keep thinking I'm not pronouncing his name right because I get stuck in that. But
it's an interesting, like, I pronounce, like, if people ask us, like, as a kid, somebody said, is it Babak? And I just went, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I don't know.
You're an Iranian background?
Yeah.
And so it's an unusual name even in London, right?
Yeah. And basically, it's Babak.
Babak.
But at school, it was like Babak, and I just went with it. And
yeah.
So it's a very complicated question to answer because I can hear myself, and I go Babak because that's the way it phonetically will sound here. But I know that I'm saying it, like I've compromised.
Right. You know, I'm the same way because my name is Lisa Levy, technically, but a lot of people say Levy. And I remember when I asked my parents, they laughed at me when I asked if it was Levy or Levy. So I was humiliated at home by it. But I still don't really like to correct people. The only people I correct are people that have really become my friends because I feel like if they're my friends, like I've had people introduce me and they should, you know, whatever. I feel like, you know, they should know.
Well, it gets
embarrassing. But I don't care, really.
It gets embarrassing if you leave it, and then at some point you realize that person's going to be in your life for longer than.
Right.
So it's always good to get it right at the beginning.
Right.
Because 6 years go by, and you're just letting one person say your name wrong, and other people in your friend group are thinking, why is this person still getting it wrong?
Right.
They've never been. They've never been corrected.
I don't care. But, you know, the thing is, it's like social situations have so much. There's so many things that are awkward within them that it's just it's just so minor, really, so minor, and all the awkwardness that happens in social situations.
Yeah.
So I'm going to explain to people how I know you and about your work, and then we can get, you know, then you can tell them what I got right and and what I didn't. But anyway, folks, so I don't know if you guys, if you know me at all, you know that like the two things I really am into is comedy and art, visual conceptual art. So I found Babak on the Instagrams, and like many people, I think he's really good. I thought, wow, this guy's really, really good. Happened to meet him in London last winter, December, because I was there for a wedding and he was having a show, blah, blah, blah. And since that time, and you guys have to come, this is tonight. Okay, so this is, I didn't tell you guys this before, but I actually, this is going to be, yeah, in October, opened a gallery, like a conceptual gallery, art gallery, right inside a comedy place, the Brooklyn Comedy Collective, to show really, really good, funny art. Because I think that it's an, I don't know, it's an area of art that I personally like, art with humor. And I don't think it gets enough attention. And I feel like I know enough. I feel like I know about it. And I also really like comedy, and I know, you know, I'm involved with comedians and stuff like that. And they don't really have access to the art world the way, no one does. No one cares about, the average person does not give a fuck about art. So I am trying to meld the two communities. And so Babak shows the second show, and he hasn't been to New York for a while. So he actually is here. In person for the opening, and the opening is tonight. So you have to come. It's at the Brooklyn Comedy Collective Doghouse. It's at 137 Montrose Avenue. That's the Montrose stop on the L train. And at 6 to 9, there'll be some drinks, and there'll be some great art. And Babak made these hilarious postcards that we will be selling, all handmade, for $50. Anyway, that's the deal. That's what's going on tonight. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, I'll give it to you. Explain your work. Explain it. Go on. Explain it to me.
For this exhibition, what I decided would be the most efficient thing to do is to essentially, I tried to make a miniature retrospective of all this text-based work that has been my primary, I guess it's my,
that's your thing. That's your gig.
It's become it. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like your work is really, really funny, and it's sort of the work itself. It's funny because it says art, like it looks like art, but you could easily just say it and it would still be funny. But the thing about it is that I think that the tone of the delivering of the line, like a comedian would deliver it in person, but the way that your art is, you kind of are able to deliver it visually with the right tone so people get the humor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, and it's a relief to hear.
I really intellectualize that.
If it works, because I don't ever know if it works, especially like, even though we speak the same language, essentially, like, when I'm writing them out again, I'm like, oh, some words, maybe they don't translate the same. So I'm always interested when somebody, like, because there was a time when somebody in Brazil wanted to do a show, and then mm-hmm. I looked at him, I'd never thought about this before, but even though it's all text anyway, so it's already sort of alienating a lot of people who necessarily English isn't their first language,
right?
I hadn't even considered that. But then it's also written in a kind of incorrect way for the delivery, not all the time, but the wording isn't necessarily grammatically always correct.
Yeah, there's it's colloquial.
There's a tone, and that tone, if it's not mm-hmm. your primary language, you may not even notice the subtleties of that. And then it made me think, I'd never considered these things because I'm just speaking from my voice.
Yeah, right. It's your voice.
And so in a lot of ways, it's kind of trying to be all-encompassing and inclusive to everyone. But then suddenly realizing that maybe it's not. And it's quite nice to sometimes realize or learn that.
So do you feel that, I mean, Bebek has a, you've got a fan base. I mean, you sell a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not all like $10,000 paintings, but you're selling a lot of work.
No, it's like I graduated in 2001.
From St. Martin's.
St. Martin's. Almost pre-internet. So it's a different, like, I trained mm-hmm. in a different way. Right. To, like, but now weirdly, like, via Instagram, kind of ended up that using that as a gallery, basically. That was my gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say in the last 6 years, this is like my living. So it's,
yeah,
it's
a, I mean, it's...
It took a long time. But I had no backup plan.
Not that long, really. 6 years.
Well, I mean, it's been like...
I
guess 15... It took 15 years until... It was weird because people always liked it. And it's very confusing to try and make sense of when liking turned into also
money.
Buying.
Buying.
But it was a very... It's like... I always feel like there's a sort of like... If you just stay...
Doing it.
Yeah. Eventually they go, he's not going away.
Right.
We're going to have to give him a chance.
You have 30, he's got 35,000 followers on Instagram, which is a lot. But also you must be selling like, I don't know, thousands of works every year, right? To be making, I mean, some of them I know cost more. There's like, you know, neon things and big things, but then some of them are also very affordable, smaller.
I mean, I do it all on my own as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, I have trouble if I say I did it all on my own. I have people who help me, and like my kid's mum's a massive help to me.
You have a gallery. You have galleries.
Well, I have a few
shows.
You have shows.
He's very, very self-deprecating. So don't listen to what he says.
I mean, no, because you just said I sell thousands of books. But I should say, like, I have essentially everything comes via a website where I haven't sort of, like, differentiated items. So it's like you can go on this website. And there's neons that, when they do sell, can go up to, like, £6,500. I don't know what that equates to in dollars, but I guess the same. But also you can buy a packet of badges or a greeting card for £3 or £4. And they're just all on the same page.
Right.
I haven't sort of...
Right.
I quite like the mess of it.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that I particularly appreciate about your work is the accessibility of it, and that it's not like... It doesn't have like this kind of like pretentious capital A art. You know, it can appeal to a lot of people, and a lot of people can own it. You're not trying to, like, you know, do that whole, like, you know what I mean, pretentious art bullshit thing.
I think even when I was at St. Martin's, it's like ultimately, I think it's, and it's what's nice about this, and it's because I also am a big comedy fan, and the one art form that I most respect and I've been working with comedians, but the one thing I've never done is have the guts to stand up and say, I think this is funny and I'm going to perform it. Like, the fear of that is immense.
Really?
And I feel like when you leave something, the longer and longer I've left it, the more pressure it is that it has to be
good.
If I was to do it, I can't, it's almost like I can't start from the beginning. I have to now have a honed act. And I basically, this art career has always been like me going round the block, trying every other way to make people laugh, other than the most basic way, which is just get up and say something into a microphone.
Right.
It's a weird career that's like worked out, but it's ultimately, it's just wanting to do that simple thing.
So do you think you're going to wind up doing that eventually, though?
I mean, I've been working with a comedian called Ray Badron in he's an Australian comedian in England. And, like, yeah, he's always like, we should go and do this thing. And that's what he does every day.
Yeah.
And, like, I can't fight. I mean, hopefully he's not listening, but I'm not going to fight it forever. I just have...
He really wants you to do it.
Well, and for him, it's like, you learn by going to do it.
Yeah.
You don't learn overthinking it at home.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So I've conceded that at some point when I understand what it is we're actually doing, I will have to get up. Uh-huh. Like, I know I'm working to that because I wouldn't be putting myself in this situation.
So you do feel like it is somewhat of in your future or goal or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I made a short film called Freelancer.
Yeah.
With a production company, and they make like a adult comedy puppet show called Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've written, I played myself.
Yeah, no, I could see that.
I did some sort of, let's say, acting. And
right.
So I've been working towards, it's a very strange thing where it's like, once like, you always have to stay a bit uncomfortable. And like when the art thing was becoming a bit sort of like, it's
too good now. It's too easy. You conquered that.
I don't want to say it's too easy because people start to take, like, other people start, different variables come in. Like people start doing similar things and then you realize that you are competitive and it's like you get jealous and you're trying to maintain your presence because.
Right.
But at the same time,
it's not the challenge that it was because you're making a living at it, which means you've pretty much conquered it. I mean, that's a big deal.
Also, when you're making a living at it, it becomes a job.
Right.
And once this becomes a job, that terrible artist temperament comes in. It's like, I don't want to do the thing you want. I want to.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So there is like, I didn't think about it, but something naturally drew me to like, let's put ourselves in a more compromise, like a difficult spot and
challenge yourself. I agree with that. I mean, I think that's really good. You want to keep growing creatively, but you've played in bands, you're a musician. Mm-hmm. So you've been on stage a lot, right?
Yeah. And I was a singer in one band, and I do know that like in, say, the in-between songs, I didn't mind. Like, I do enjoy the almost like the nervous energy and the attention. Like in the moment, I'm fine.
You like being in front of a camera, or you're okay? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You don't mind it?
I don't mind it.
I don't think you would.
And I'm like, I'm shy, but when I've got, like, I wouldn't shout and get the attention of the room, but if I have the attention,
mm-hmm.
I won't run away. Quite like that.
Right, right.
But what I realized is the pressure's off when you're, if somebody just gave me a mic at an event, like, I wouldn't run away. I wouldn't be very good, but I wouldn't sort of buckle in fear.
Right, right.
But there's no pressure to that because you didn't write it. It's the thing with a stand-up act. I think the fear is
it's the writing.
You have to be confident in the thing that you've decided this. It's pre-arranged that you think this, what you're going to go and say is going to be, well, it's going to have to relate to someone. I think that's the fear of not relating.
Do you feel like, I mean, you seem very relatable. Do you have a fear about not relating or just in this particular instance?
I think it's in that instance because it would be very exposing if it writing something and posting it on Instagram. The thing is, you don't get negative comments. It may not get lots of likes, but a like's a like. Like,
yeah,
you're only
right.
getting likes, so you're living in a fake.
No, but you can also take it down if you change your mind.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
I used to make a point in not doing that so that it was like an actual visual document.
Good.
I don't think there's that many times, I think, where I have taken stuff. There's stuff on there.
Yeah, I mean, the guy does very well on Instagram. Very, very.
But there's
very
stuff
well.
There that I don't think I like. And like sometimes it's like a weird rule. It wasn't like a out and out rule, but there's a weird thing where it's like, if I make some work, even when it's still wet, I'll post it. Because I did it. So it's like, I did this, so I posted it.
You committed to it to make it.
I'll look through some other day, and I'll be like, yeah, I shouldn't have. If I had time to think, maybe I wouldn't have put that up. But then I don't delete it, because that feels... I have this weird art training.
No,
it's like the late 90s.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah.
That will have led to something else. So you may as well see the working
process. Well, it's a process. It's not just one piece. Like, it's always a process.
But I think some people quite like to just give the... have a mystery.
That's true. But that's, you know, your work is pretty... you seem to really want... I mean, it seems to be pretty... I would say raw, is that the word? I don't know. But it doesn't seem to be... You seem to be putting it out there.
I mean, a lot of it's pretty stupid, though. And that's why I do suddenly realize, talking about it like right now, it's like, there'll just be a film idea and just say, like, Chicken Nugget City. And this is what... People will go and go, all right, this is what they're talking about.
So that's really what... I just wanted to say one more thing about comedy, which is, like... You can't really know how it's going to go till it's out there. And I think that could be what's really hard. Like, you know what I mean? You can't really practice comedy without an audience.
No, I think that's...
And yeah. I think that's the hard part, right?
Yeah, this is a very insular working process that I've been...
Right.
And I'm good at working like that. It was nice doing the film, because it was collaborative, and I'd written it, but like ultimately, like the way it looks, and I didn't direct it, and the way it comes together, and the people on the day, there's a lot of different things, and it was nice to just be part of something.
But you can also reshoot a scene.
Yeah, that's true.
And comedy is completely live. Just like this radio show, although we could edit it. And you're not standing there looking at people who are not laughing at you. Mm. I think every comedian has to go through... I mean, I totally support you as a comedian. I'm not just the only one. I know that you have people who are supporting you as a comedian. But I think no matter who you are, how talented and natural you are at it, there are going to be bombing incidences.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, you need to go through those. You're only going to learn from the mistakes you make.
I think even really successful comedians, I think Marc Maron bombs sometimes. I've heard him talk about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you have like all that cushioning because you know, you made all this money you have all these accolades and whatever, but you still bomb.
I've got to say, like, my son's done stand-up. He's now 16, but when he was 11, he didn't tell us, but he signed up to his primary school talent show as a stand-up, which kids don't do that. So
and
he was really good. Like, we weren't allowed to go to this. It happened in school hours, and he won.
He won?
He won.
Wow.
And then got put through to a sort of bigger sort of borough. Live in Hackney.
Oh, he went on to like a bigger...
He went on
wow.
to a bigger, to a bigger talent show, which was like three or four schools, and we were allowed to go to this.
Oh, wow.
And I gave him a joke for it, and to be honest, the joke didn't do well.
Oh.
I mean, this is to kids.
Oh, wait, he didn't sell it.
But worse than that, I remember, and I shouldn't...
I hope you punished him.
Oh, well...
Go ahead.
I probably shouldn't say this, but I mean, this just doesn't really paint me in a good light, because he came third in this one.
In the big one.
And then as we were leaving, and it's a different school, so we don't know how to leave, but you could see that he was starting to, like, you could see his face starting to turn. And we took him to this cafe, and I was like, literally told him, like, because he was kind of like, bummed out
yeah,
that
of course.
He'd come third. Yeah. But it was still third.
Oh, my God. And it was still like a... Yeah, no, that
was
huge.
And I literally told him, like, you know, if you want to be a successful comedian, you need to, you know, get used to failing.
Right.
That was my... Because that's how I understood it. I understood
it
as...
Right.
This is a coping mechanism. And this... I mean, not that I want him to just but that, because that's my idea of what comedy is like, it's for it's a coping mechanism, it's right. a defense thing,
right?
But also, it's not, it's trying to find common ground or some sort of relate, like to yeah. not feel like you're alone, but like,
yeah,
to go into it winning everything and thinking you like that confident. It's something that I find difficult at the moment. Like sometimes, like Jerry Seinfeld, say, I find his sort of
his style
where it's kind of like his observation or his opinion is like everybody's. He's sort of talking to you like
every
all,
man.
We all agree with this.
Yeah, it's an insight.
And I find that confidence jarring with what I understand.
Yeah, I used to really like him, but I gotta say, Jerry is way too emotionless. Yeah, it's a little bit too clean. I don't mean clean, like not cursing clean. It's just a little bit too emotionless. Mm. Which, do you have comedians that you like in particular that we might recognize?
There's a lot of people in the UK right now that I go and see, and there's a lot of like at the moment, like I'm working with this Australian guy Ray Badron, and there's Sam Campbell in the UK right now doing lots of funny sort of absurdist surreal stuff.
Uh-huh.
And another Australian, Josh Glass. They're all Australian, but they're all in the UK. I like my like as a kid, it was like The Jerk's my favorite film of all time.
Oh yeah, that's a great film, right?
And Steve Martin, and I think Steve Martin's like he was the first entry level. Even I was probably like 11 or 12 when I first saw that.
And oh
like,
yeah,
even like The Three Amigos and just The Man with Two Brains. I don't know how these have dated. I know I saw The Jerk recently and it holds up. There's nothing in there that's like, I know there's a lot of films from the 80s that I grew up.
Yeah. Right?
If I play them to Arthur now, my son, it's like, oh yeah, this is off. But The Jerk's still strong.
And no, I mean, he's totally one of the greatest comedians of all time. There's no question about it on so many different levels, like the writing, the performing, the physical stuff, the absurdity, the truth. Yeah, that guy's good.
He's good.
Yeah, he can do it.
Yeah, and I think because it's rooted uh-huh. in, I don't know,
uh-huh.
knowledge. It's not just an accident. It's not an accident.
So, you know what I was thinking? I was thinking because... you know, for the Dr. Lisa portion, that I was going to ask you about some of your work, I made a note of some of the postcards and some of the work that you do.
Okay.
And then I was going to ask you about the emotions, the feelings, like how the inspiration behind them. Like, what do you mean by that? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
that's the whole fucking show to get you on this. I'm here to make my guests uncomfortable. That's what I'm here for. So anyway,
let's go.
He's looking at me now. He's giving me a really, I'm hosting the opening for this guy's show tonight. I don't know if this is a good idea. Usually I don't see my guests ever again. But
I'll just be crying in the corner. It'll all be part. This is all part of the show.
Now all my friends are going to come, and Babak is going to turn them all against me. That's what's going to happen. And they're going to. You can complain now. You will be able to complain about me along with the people that really know me.
Well, let's see what you're going to say.
All right,
Let's see if I know what I'm talking about.
Well, there's two areas that I'm curious about.
Okay.
One is the self-deprecating area, but we're going to go for the really hard area first.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot about there. Okay, I'm going to read them and then I'm going to tell you. And then you'll see what I mean, guys. Listen, there's a theme here, okay? I'm in the bush outside and I really love you. I made a career trying to tell you I love you. The hours are long. Walking a tightrope, trying not to slip on a memory of being madly in love. I love you and I want to give you all my money. All my days without you are shit. And here's the last one. I miss you. This one seems the most real. I miss you so much when you're gone, but when you are here, I can't take it. So now those all seem to have to do with failed romance.
Yes.
So
and it is, I got to say, like, I do these things in the moment. So I don't realize, it's like, because we put the show up yesterday. And when I do them, when I stick them all together, sometimes there's so much stuff that I don't actually read it all. But yeah, every now and again, I look at it. And go, oh, God, this is quite exposing. And you don't notice these connections.
Right. That's
when
why
you're just doing it as you go.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, I know.
So there seems to be a failed love. I have to ask this. Failed love or an unrequited love? Were you aware of that theme in your work?
Yeah, I mean, I always,
you must be.
Yeah, and some of it, I mean, it all comes from real places, but also,
who's a girl?
I mean, it's interesting because that is.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Like with the I'm in the Bush one, which was the most popular thing for a long time, and it kind of is the. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that pays my rent for a mm-hmm. lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that one again before you speak about it, so people, because I read a lot, so I just want to. Here's the saying, all right, guys? I'm in the bush outside, and I really love you. Go ahead.
Well, so me and we all get on fine, and it's a very happy, functioning, dysfunctional family. But when me and
your family, you're
it's like. Me, my son, my ex, his mom.
His mom.
My
okay, that's
ex.
What you mean by family.
When we broke up, like, I don't know, like, he basically, essentially has a stepfather, and when they were going out, almost like out of some sort of respect, so I feel, this is like I'm making it up, and I feel like I shouldn't even, things where I feel uncomfortable at talking.
Okay, you don't have to. You don't have to. I don't want, but go ahead.
But it's only because somebody wants, gave me a hard time with this. It's only happened once where somebody was triggered by it as a stalking thing. And I'm surprised when that happened that it hasn't happened before. But it's so opposite to that because the root of it is that she lived on the corner opposite the park. And sometimes I'd drop her off. And I knew that they were like, this is a
So thing. You knew she had a boyfriend?
Yeah, it had been a while, but there was never any evidence because I think it was just to protect me.
But like, you didn't talk to her about it directly?
Yeah. We.
So you were aware?
Yeah. But like I mean, it wasn't a surprise. Like it was common knowledge. Everyone.
Right.
But there was a sort of like, there was no evidence. Just out of, I don't know.
But you hadn't met him.
Sometimes I'd turn around to draw, like I'd forget something. And as I was turning around, like he'd be coming from the park. And. I'd say essentially that piece of work is a tribute to his love for her because he's hiding in the bush waiting for me to leave so he can come back. It's not.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, but I didn't realize that. Like, I started making that piece of work as a handwritten card for Valentine's Day for this art market.
I love that. That's a Valentine's card.
Yeah, because it was like. Because it's kind of creepy, it's kind of funny, but also it's, if you give it, it's my writing. It's not so
right.
It's detached from the actual person. They can defend themselves by saying
it. Right.
But so I'd been selling this for a couple of years, and then one day, and I was always surprised that people liked it so much. I thought I'd lifted it from like a rom com.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know, I thought it was too obvious. And then like it just hit me like years later. It's like, oh. It's from my own life. I didn't instantly go, I can make, you don't instantly have a sad situation and go, I can monetize this. it comes, I guess it goes into your body and then eventually it comes out in card form. And then years later you realize that it's, but I find it quite funny that it's actually like, romantic, but it's not my failure, and it's actually positive.
Yeah, that is really funny because I assumed the other way around, that it would have been you in the bush, but you see it.
Well,
as
it does
the
say
other.
I'm in the bush, but yeah.
No, but I thought, like, when you were telling the story, and it was sort of what I imagined, that, you know, that this guy was, you know, now with your ex, and you were sort of like watching them, but it was really the other way around that you imagined it, which is sort of interesting, because it's still like, especially like you, it's interesting because you still have, I mean, particularly, I guess when he first started seeing her, this is somebody that you knew. Do you know what I mean? Like somebody you knew really, really well, and you had a child. You guys co-parent well, it sounds like. And stuff.
I mean,
friends. So you have a good relationship. There wasn't any. So you were very aware of what was going on in her life, and he much more, I'm sure, especially in the beginning, than he was.
Yeah, but this is just an example of, like, in some weird way, everyone trying to respect and protect each other. But, like, and, yeah, but it's, like, but it was always weird. And I never used to sort of mention the origin of this before because I still find it weird. I don't know how it implicates. It's very hard doing work that is very personal and trying to not implicate other people who maybe don't want the
stuff
out.
No, and what I particularly love about this piece, and I think other people are responding to, is like it's, I mean, I'm interested and it's satisfying to hear the literal story behind it, but that's really kind of irrelevant because, I mean, this just brings me right back to when I was like 17 driving past boys' houses, you know, and there are always, and it really speaks to me, what I get out of it is that feeling of having a crush on somebody and they have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I used to spend hours walking. As a teenager, I was in some seaside town in the south of England and just walking the town center for hours just to occasionally bump into this girl in this coat. And I'm never going to say anything, just getting like a glance and that's enough. And then it's like another 40 minutes elapsed around until maybe that would happen again. And that would be Saturday. Mm-hmm. That was the most exciting thing that could happen.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the work is basically trying to encapsulate that.
Like you like having crushes on girls, or you like, maybe like what you're sort of saying about doing comedy, you liked having the crush or the fantasy or whatever it is more than the actual reality.
Well, I think that comes, like some of the other ones you read are basically those things
like I love you and I want to give you all my money, or
that's just, but that's when you really like, that's when you hit the jackpot. And like, that you shouldn't do that, but like there's a moment
it's
where
it's like you get so like thrown off. I love this person here, just and then walking a tightrope, trying not to slip on a memory of being madly in love.
I think that was from a failed romance, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people talk about romance that directly in art, which I appreciate here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit sort of twee, isn't it? Is it? I don't know.
People respond to it. I think that, well, also, I think it's really hard. I mean, the reason people respond to it is because it's funny and you're making fun of yourself, but I don't really think, like, it's not like tragic or somebody who, like, I don't like the guy, like, you can obviously laugh about it. So it's not like a real heartbreak or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's why next to one of these, there'll be something that says like Chicken Nugget City. Just
off. Yeah.
So it can get real, but it's like, I don't know, I have to protect myself now.
No.
I made a career out of telling you I love you. It's basically the roundabout way of like not ever actually having done the comment, like not being able to be direct enough. And just, there's a fear in actually saying That's the irony here. It's like there's always a fear of doing the direct thing, so you just end up going around in
circling
circles.
It.
and that's what I've done. It's like I could have just told somebody, I guess, 10 years ago or something, and mm-hmm. I'd probably be quite lazy and I wouldn't do any of this work. The work is fueled by wanting to.
Another area that I don't have is quite as many. There's plenty, guys. You should go and see the show because you can pick them all out. But there's a lot of your self-deprecating work that you do. I saw the picture. This isn't in the show, guys, but he has a t-shirt that he made that's hilarious. It's one of those just do it Nike shirts, and it's
oh, that's not actually me.
That's not you.
That's
didn't
not
make
me.
That?
No, it looks like me, and I keep wearing it. So I should. I always
can't do it. It says I can't do it.
It's
but even wearing it, that's great. Who did it?
Another guy called Gory Bastard on that's his Instagram name.
Glory Bastard?
Gory.
Gory Bastard. Yeah. We're going to give him a shout out.
Yeah.
We got to look him up.
But it is like everyone thinks I did. And every now and again, I have to remember that I have to clear on the, up on any post where I'm happy. Because I basically lived in that t-shirt for a long time.
So you.
And that's what, like, because I started jogging and that's what I wore. I didn't even think, it's just.
So funny,
It's just what I wear. It wasn't like I'm going to wear this outfit. I'd notice it when I'm sort of doing a really bad job in the park. I think, well, it's accurate enough. I must have. I've got that t-shirt.
You could steal it. No one would know. Like, just rip it. You don't need to do that.
I already am because everyone, like, you see, everyone thinks it is mine.
Because it's so, totally. Because like I said, guys, he's really self-deprecating. And then there's another one that I wrote down that I think is really popular. This is the only other one I wrote down on this topic. There's a lot there, but I didn't write them all down. So anyway, you have one that says, I'm so scared of being found out. I'm not even sure what I've done. So there's that one.
Yep. I mean, that one, I feel like that's the most relatable one. In a lot of ways, I have it in neon in the window of the sort of shop front.
Yeah.
It gets people stopping quite a lot. I think. I call that one imposter syndrome, and essentially it's like I haven't stopped doing, like, I've been doing what I've been doing for like. The whole time.
A long, long time. Like,
As it starts to actually work, that sort of feeling of guilt actually gets stronger for some reason.
What do you mean? Really?
That sort of imposter syndrome element to it. Because I've been doing it and I got used to even though I don't have a backup plan and I wouldn't know what I'd do if it didn't work out.
Right.
And it could also all come crashing at any... Because it's based on such...
Right.
It's not based on anything. The success is based on the luck of like giving it to the right person at the right time and then it being shared maybe at the right time. Because if it was shared like on Instagram an hour later, maybe no one would have seen it. All those things are so random that I can't feel comfortable in this because all I know is that when it came to it, all the work existed because I was doing it. I'm not making it up. It's genuine.
Right.
So it's that practice preparation thing, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Where success is like being prepared and timing or something like that.
Yeah, whatever that thing that neither of us know. I was prepared, I guess. And so it, but I've been doing it to no attention and to no success for a long time. And so just doing the same thing and then getting some of that just feels like there should be more. I should be doing more. It can't be.
Oh, you mean it's too easy?
Well, I don't want to say
I mean, it's not
it's
too
not
easy.
Because
it's
because I have to factor in the 15 years of no holidays.
Of course.
To be honest, in a lot of ways, what worked in my favor, which is, and it made me feel really guilty at the time, is that the pandemic, we were all stuck indoors and suddenly like the fact that for a long time my art practice was something that was funded on essentially like £2 a day started to work in my favor, because I just needed ink and I just needed paper. I could have that at home. I could carry on working. I didn't have to go to the studio.
Right.
Because I can just do it from home. And to be honest, since that time, I'm still kind of working from home because I haven't moved everything back properly. But all those limitations were like suddenly a saving grace. And so it kind of like, and it worked. And it's like working. Mm-hmm. And that's an alien.
But it seems like there's a lot. I mean, self-deprecating is, you are a self, that's part of your personality, right?
And it's really annoying, which is also self-deprecating.
It's so funny, though. that was self, it's a defense. Is it a defense?
I know exactly where it comes from.
Okay.
Well,
good. That'll save us time.
because I've been doing this other exhibition. Well, I've been prepping for this exhibition in Liverpool.
Yeah. And when is that?
It's in February. And
oh, really? I'm going to get Dallas to go. I'm going to come to London, make Dallas go.
You're going to come to London, make Dallas go to Liverpool.
How far is Liverpool from London?
I mean, it's far, but the train's actually only 2 hours. So
that's
it's not
bad.
It's a big space. It's a big, it's like,
come,
for me.
Come to Liverpool, guys. We'll talk about it later. Come to Liverpool.
For me, it's going to be a big show. But I think I'm going to call
it. Is it in a gallery museum? I know it's like a big show.
Yeah.
It's
called the Blue Coat. And it's free rooms that are like I get to do things that I don't normally do.
Because it's a big space and there's a budget.
It's going to be, there's also going to be, like, I've always operated these things, like, because of the music thing, like gigs. So there's also going to be the things that people want to see or are familiar with, so that I'm not like going
to. Right. Right,
but it's an opportunity to try some other things, and I think I'm going to call the show "Thanks for Having Me."
Oh,
and it's basically it's just the way that I've had to operate. That's the way I basically operate, or in a shop, on a bus. It's like the way I kind of conditioned myself, because, like, my parents are both Iranian. I'm Iranian, but I was born in Britain, and speak, like, essentially English was my second language.
Oh, really?
And always had, well, because my parents spoke Persian in the house.
Yeah,
so I had a fear of, like, hearing myself say anything English. Like, I got pulled back from school, and the teacher sort of offered me some, my mum was there, it wasn't like being bribed, but right. as like a 5-6 year old, it's like, if you say hello, we'll give you this just to get me to speak. Because I used to be like a mute. Like,
really?
Yeah.
You didn't talk?
Because there was like a fear, like, well, I didn't have to speak English. So it was like a fear of hearing what that would even sound like out of your own mouth.
But
we had Brexit in Britain recently.
Right.
And in those moments, it's like, and also like touring in a band, it's like, essentially I've like raised myself with culture that's essentially like white.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, I'm like,
total.
In a world that I then get reminded, like, Brexit was interesting because I also don't feel like a very good Iranian, because I don't know, like, I can speak to my parents a bit, but I don't know the roots of anything, and I've sort of like tried to find my own.
Such a strange time to be Iranian as well, right?
Yeah.
At this moment in
time.
Yeah,
and it's the same with like trying to get into this country. It's like I always get stopped.
Really?
Yeah, and so that there is an element of I always feel like a guest, basically. I don't feel comfortable in I don't feel like I'm from, like, Brexit reminds me that I'm not from Britain, because people who are the sort of nationalistic sort of those, without getting too, like,
it's a very homogeneous, it's a pretty homogeneous country, I guess, compared to this one. Not completely, but they have a lot of it.
But it's like you go, oh yeah, I'm not really from here, and I'm not really from here.
Uh-huh.
I'm just sort of floating in the middle, and so I'm always just like, I operate like a guest. I don't, Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing about you that obviously seems that, you know, you're from, you know, that you are from any other kind of culture or anything like that other than Britain. But do you feel that, what makes you feel that way? That you're not from, like, is it from other people? That's what I'm getting. Like,
I mean, it's like, you'll get the sort of like, when we used to tour in the band, like if you, the main cities, like Manchester's okay. Like anywhere mm-hmm. for mixed, anywhere mixed is like, mm-hmm. okay. But like, you'll have a nice time in the daytime in some other, I don't want to sort of badmouth any cities
no.
in England.
No,
but,
no.
But like, you have a nice day and then suddenly at nighttime, it's like, oh, me and my brother, like, we're not going to be out anymore because once the pub crowd come in, it's kind of like, you know, you'll be walking, you hear some smashed glass, like somebody's, you know, we're not the normal people that you'd see.
You don't feel like you look like everybody else.
No, I don't.
Else.
Like, if I go to the country, I don't feel comfortable in like the English countryside. I don't look like a person that should be there.
You look kind of like you could fit in with the Jews. Maybe that's why I don't notice it so well.
Yeah,
much. Maybe in the Jew world.
There's not that many Jews in the English countryside.
Yeah, aren't that many Jews in... No, that's probably...
I'm very comfortable in, like, New York. I'm very comfortable in London. I don't feel like I can be any other... It's like, I don't see it as, like, England. I just see London, really.
So how does that relate to being self-deprecating?
I think because I always treat myself like a bit like a guest. I'm always like, I don't like to be too bombastic and like, I've got...
Presumptuous?
Yeah.
Presumptuous?
And it's just come from, I guess it's also a bit this thing of like jumping, like doing the start thing and then suddenly going, oh, I'm now going to just be a small time, like start this comedy thing and try and like do it. And always... feeling like that sense of discomfort, like means that there's an element of it that I actually now I'm starting to find a bit annoying in myself because I actually am doing all the things like I wanted to do.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of funny because I guess there was a point where it kind of made more sense, but now you have all these shows and stuff.
Yeah, I need
so
to,
much
I
stuff's
need to,
going on.
I don't. Again, I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a plan for it to work.
Right.
And
right,
now you're catching me a bit where maybe it's gonna work. Maybe it'll go crashing back down. But I'm working it out.
I think people do appreciate self-deprecating humor. Because it kind of takes the pressure off of everybody, I think, somehow. Although, my husband gets mad at me when I do it too much because he says, like when I'm self-deprecating about being an American, he's like, you're trashing our country or something. There was something you said. I personally, here's a quote from you.
Oh.
See, I'm paying attention. I'm going to get points for this. I personally use humor as a coping mechanism, so if it gets a laugh or people feel connected, I guess it's done its job. Mm-hmm. So are you trying to make people feel comfortable then? Is that part of it?
I mean, I take comfort in laughs, so it's self-serving. Mm-hmm. It's like, if I'm feeling like down, I like to be able to use, if I'm feeling sad about something, it's like, it's nice, but if at least it can make a get a laugh.
Yeah, yeah,
the same way that change. I'm in the bush thing, like, it right. comes from, like, at the time, a difficult thing, but actually now, you that difficult laugh. Thing's become, like, the
Yeah, now you're making a living off of it.
But it wasn't instant, but it's kind of like, it's nice to be able to at least get something
Well, it made you laugh in the moment, I'm sure. And whatever feeling in the moment made you think of that, it probably was great relief in the moment. We only have like 2-4 minutes left. So were your parents supportive? That's what I really want to know.
Yeah, I don't know if they fully understand. Like, they are. But
have they, like, were they always supportive, like, growing up? Do you feel like you were in a family? Because you're self-deprecating, so I'm asking, did you feel like you were in a supportive family situation growing up?
In the sense of, like...
You did okay at school, and your parents liked you, and you didn't, you know...
Yeah, I did okay. I didn't do, like, incredible.
No, but I mean, you were in a, you know, a fairly, like, you felt like you got enough. Did you get enough approval growing up?
Yeah, I think so. And I was like the older one, so I was kind of like slightly more mollycoddled and protected, and wasn't allowed to do as much. I was a bit jealous. It's interesting because the way my parents like things that my brother's like 8 years younger, so it's like a slightly
a
unusual
gap,
and it was a different. He almost grew up in a different set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So we've got different versions of growing up.
Did your dad change jobs or something? Did you move or
something? Yeah, sort of. And like when my brother was growing up, he had a more difficult, like they moved quite a few times. And I guess I had a slightly more stable
thing.
But at the same time, I was like, there were a lot of restrictions on what I could do compared to other people. Would be quite jealous of him later on. But then I find out it all kind of balances out into the same thing. Like there was an element of like, my parents basically all in the arts as well.
Oh, really? What did they do?
Well, my dad was an architect. My mum paints.
Okay.
But there was a resistance from my mum's side. Like, it was kind of like trying to push me away from studying art. I was allowed to do it if I go into St. Martin's, and I did.
Right.
But I wasn't allowed. I don't think I was going to be allowed to do it if I was just in the local arts
school. Right. So they had high expectations. That's good. They put pressure on you. They put pressure on, they expected you to succeed, and you have. Let's put it that way. We say that?
But
that's not a very self-deprecating thing to say. So anyway, we have 2 minutes left. Let's talk about the opening tonight.
Yep.
And make sure that everybody remembers it. So aren't you really excited to see all this work that we've been talking about? And you can, so there's like, how many postcards did you get in the show? Like over 100, right?
I was trying to do the math. So
I don't know.
I think went to like 16, and then there was 5, and then there's about 100 in that cabinet.
There's like about 100, and they're all really different. And you can buy them for $50, which is ridiculously cheap. And you can also just come by and meet Babak while he's in America, which is a very, you know, he's not going to be here, you know, he's in America. So come by, and that's 137 Montrose Avenue in Bushwick. And recite your website and your URL, do that, your Instagram, do that part.
Well, it's just my name, Babak Ganji, and what's the website? It's babakganjiworks.com. Uh-huh. I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I'll post all that stuff also. So, and it's probably up there right now. So thank you guys for listening, and make sure you check out the archives. I have over 350 shows, and you could listen to that for like probably, you could probably take like 2 weeks and just listen to the whole thing. And, check me out on Dr. Lisa Levy on Instagram and Lisa Levy Artwork on Instagram. And go to listen to Dr. Lisa, and you can hear all the shows and see all the work. And thanks.